Welcome to Stories in the Valley. I'm your host, Charles Kiernan. In just a few days, Friday, June 21st, and Saturday, the 22nd, is the Brandywine Storytelling Festival in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. Five of the featured performers are Bill Harley, Kim Wetkamp, Andy Offutt Irwin, Willie Claflin, and Bill Lepp, as well as other tellers. These are some of the biggest names in the world of storytelling. At the festival's weekend pass price of $35, this is a steal. To give you a taste of what you will hear, I am going to play a piece by Willie Claflin and another by Bill Lepp. Sit back and relax.
I'd like to bring a guest teller out. If you have not met Maynard before, he's the only Native American moose on the circuit at this point. He tells traditional Mother Moose stories. Actually receives them directly through his antlers. I met him in 1975 in Blue Hill, Maine, and I'm going to have him share a traditional moose tale with you this evening. I would like to tell story of the bully goat Grimm. Once upon a time there was a large and obnoxious bully goat Grimm, twice more large than normal, having bulked up on wild tuber root in his youth, which, as you may understand, contains an abundance of natural steroids. So he grew to a large and ungainly size, and as if that were not enough, he suffered from random hostility syndrome. And his favorite thing to do was whenever he saw a cute little furry forest animal, he would lower his big bully goat head, gdump, 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 pow, over the tops of the trees, would go the little furry forest animal and crash down on the other side into a pile of bracken, and pretty soon all the little forest mammals had little slings and bandages and crutches. And some of them had X's for eyeballs. Well, pretty soon when all the little gerbils and little chipmunks and wombats and stuff are all injured and were laid up in their little holes, the bully goat decide to go to the upland pastures where he have heard there's a wild variety of succulent grasses growing there in gay profusion. So he take the low road, which go over the bridge, now over the river, now underneath the bridge was a family of trolls. There was a mommy troll with three heads, a daddy troll with two heads, and a little baby troll with only one head, but they loved him anyway. Because you should be grateful for what you were given. Well, so now this was a happy troll family. They liked to wallow around in slops and mud and garbage, and every Wednesday would go to the dump and bring home large and useless, rusted and rotten objects, and had a large pile of garbages outside their house. And every night they would stay up late having rude noises contests and sleep in the next morning. So anyway, they were sleeping in as usual when suddenly overhead, trip-trap, come the bully goat Grimm. Well, the daddy troll wake up. Who dat trip-trapping on my bridge? And a large and dreadful voice bellow down from above. Beware, beware, the bully goat Grimm. Nobody better not mess with him. Then trip-trap, off go the bully goat Grimm. Well, the daddy troll first had on the head on the left, it spoke first. It said, he do that again, I gonna punch him in the nose. You can't do that, say his other head. It's a stupid idea. That's who are you calling stupid, say the first head. I just mean, say the second head, you with something like the bully goat Grimm, you cannot just punch him in the nose. You need a plan. You can't just do something stupid like that. You call me stupid one more time, say the first head, I go mash your nose out the back of your face. Yeah, well, you just try that, say the second, and before you know, a left and right, pow, pow, and the daddy troll knocked himself unconscionable. You see that, say the mommy troll to the baby, you see that? Through the baby, you better pay detention or you'll wind up like your father, unconscious as a muffin. You better learn to get along with yourself. And so the next morning, trip, trap, over the bridge come the bully goat grim. This time the mommy troll wake up first. Who dat trip trapping on my bridge, say the mommy troll. And a dark and dreadful voice bellow down from above. Beware, beware, the bully goat grim. Nobody better not meth with him. And trip, trap, off go the bully goat grim. Now the mommy troll's heads were named Bertha, Gladys, and Louise. I think we had better talk this over, said Bertha. We better put our heads together. So first, they make themselves 3 cups of tea and they sit down to process. I think, said Bertha, if I may go first. Certainly, said Gladys and Louise. I think, said Bertha, that we should display, he is probably just acting out to get detention, and we should explain to him that all of God's creatures are supposed to get along in harmonies and ecologically on a sane on this planet Earth, and everybody should love one another. Well, said Gladys, I'm very interested in your input, but I myself think he will not listen to reason. I think we should bake him a great big chocolate cake. I think that we tell him if he promised to be good, we give him the chocolate cake. Well, said Louise, I think there is lots of relative merit in both of your proposals. But I myself think he will listen neither to reason nor bribery. I think we need to build a big trap door in the middle of the bridge. When the bully goat come, we pull on the rope, sploopy, go into the river below and float away. Well, said Bertha, I think perhaps since there is merit in all of our proposals, we should take the best aspects of each plan and in a synergistic fashion, perhaps we can put them together. And so they talked on and on and on. Until one by one they fell asleep because the effect of too much process is soporific. And early the next morning, trip-trap, over the bridge come the bully goat grim. Well, this time baby troll wake up first. Who dat trip-trapping on my bridge, say baby troll, and a dark and dreadful voice bellow down from above. Beware, beware, the bully goat grim. Nobody better not mess with him. And trip-trap, off go the bully goat grim. Say the baby troll. Nobody better not mess. That's a double negative. Because he had been homeschooled by Bertha, Gladys, and Louise. If nobody better not mess with him, that means everybody ought to mess with him. I gotta figure out how to mess with the bully goat grim, and all of a sudden, a light bulb go on over his head. Pling! Now look at that, say baby troll, the light bulb over my head. Mom! So the mommy troll come, and inside the light bulb was a pillow and a parachute. So they dig through the pile of the trash and the garbage from the garbage dump and find a moldy old pillow and strap it onto the behind of the baby troll. And the mommy troll sew some sheets together for to make a parachute, and they strap that on his back. And the next morning when the bully goat grim trip-trap come over the bridge, the baby troll is waiting in the middle of the bridge. Beware, beware, the bully goat grim, say the bully goat. But the baby troll stick his thumbs in his ears and cross his eyes and wiggle his fingers and make the rudest noise he know how to make. Well, a little thundercloud appear over the bully goat's head, and he lower his bony bully goat head and gadump, 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 gadump across the bridge toward the baby troll. But at the last second, baby troll turn around, stick the pillow behind up in the air, and poof! Up into the air go the baby troll. Whee! Up through the tops of the clouds. Pop! And at the apogee of his trajectory, He pulled the ripcord and pop, opened a parachute, and he flowed gently back down to the ground. Sing hello to the various strata of birds and bats and butterflies and buggies, coming to rest with a soft thump on the mossy bank below. Well, news about what the baby troll done, it spread like wildfire through the forest, and pretty soon all the little animals had pillows and parachutes of their own. And they were making rude noises at the bully goat grim, and gadump, gadump, poo, up into the air, but they did not crash down into the pile of bracken, and there were no more slings and bandages and X's for eyeballs, only saying hello to the birds and a strata of various buggies, and they had a wonderful time and lined up for dinnertainment, and now there is nothing worse than having random hostility syndrome and being unable to injure anyone. It was extremely depressing to the bully goat Grim, so he slunk away. He slunk and slunk until he was completely away. And the animals put away their pillows and parachutes, but they keep them in the closet just in case. So my advice to you is keep a pillow and a parachute in your closet just in case. But above all, the moral of this story, learn to recognize a double negative. Thank you. Thank you for your attention.
The Seventh Second. My friends and I attended and studied at West Virginia Wesleyan College in Buchanan, West Virginia. Well, to be perfectly honest with you, mostly we just attended West Virginia Wesleyan College. At any rate, not far from our school, there was a railroad tunnel that a man could climb up into, lay down on the rafters, and stare down the tracks below, watch the trains as they came through the tunnel. Now, I say a man could climb up into this tunnel, because no woman would ever be stupid enough to. Anyway, this would have been April, about 10 years ago. It was going on noon, and Paul, Stephen, and myself had just rolled out of our respective beds, and seeing how we all had class at 12:30, we figured it was a perfect time to take a hike. So there we were, laying belly down 30 feet above Weirton's world-famous steel, fashioning into CSNX railroad tracks running clear from Cowan to Grafton via Burnsville, Buchanan, Carrollton, and Philippi. Now, we'd done this sort of thing before, so when we heard a train whistle in the distance, we didn't think twice about it. But then, to our horror, we heard a sonic boom and looked down just in time to see General Chuck Yeager at the controls of the lead engine of that CSNX monster train now passing at Mach 1 beneath us. Now, when that train hit that tunnel going Mach 1, that tunnel became a vacuum old Mr. Hoover could only dream of. Everything within 6 miles of that tunnel was getting sucked in one end and blown out the other. I'm talking about sticks, rocks, trees, houses, outhouses, herds of cattle, you name it. Fact is, I ain't seen so much crap blown so fast since the last presidential campaign. I just looked down and said, Eureka. But then you have to understand that the rafter I was laying on gave way under the stress, and the next thing I knew, I was stuck to the back of that train like a fly to paper. But that ain't the half of it, because the minute that train left the tunnel, the vacuum quit, and I started sliding down towards the tracks below. Well, I managed to flip around and grab hold of the rear axle of that train. I was kind of flapping out there like the tail on a kite. But the lift was leaving me quick, and I knew my feet would soon be dragging. It was a classic between a rock and a hard place situation, and I figured there were two things I could do. I could either reach in my pocket, pull out my whip, lash it to those engines, and pull myself up like old cousin Indiana Jones, or I could somehow clamber up into that coal car and burrow a hole in our bituminous pal coal. Well, I didn't think pulling out my whip was a very good idea, so I reached in my pocket, pulled out my stainless steel 74-function Swiss Army-type knife, and I quickly opened up the harpoon gun and the grappling hook. I lashed a one-handed bowline around myself, 2 half-hitches around that grappling hook, and then I fired it up into the coal car. Now, my arms were tired from holding myself out like old cousin Superman, so it took me 3 or 4 seconds to finally clamber up into that coal car and get down in that hole. Well, I took a deep breath, and I said, phew. And then for the first time in the whole trip, I opened my eyes. Lord have mercy. The tracks behind me just turned bright red and melted away. The creosote timbers burst into flames. The trees alongside the track pulled themselves out of the ground, and the mighty Buchanan River was swelled up into a 40-foot tidal wave. Right, we were moving. I guess I was pretty lucky I hadn't lost my hat. Well, then I figured the smartest thing I could do would be to get off that train. And at first I thought I'd just jump. But then it occurred to me that the laws of physics say if that train's going Mach 1, when I hit the ground, I'd be going Mach 1 too. And, well, I wasn't wearing my running shoes. So I had to come up with some other way. And then the idea hit me. I scrambled down the ladder just as quick as I could. I leaned out, I reached over, and I picked up all the leaves, all the reed, all the sticks, and all the garbage. Of course, the garbage was out of stage stuff that I could reach. I scrambled back up that ladder, put all that stuff in my workshop, scrambled down that ladder one more time, and I hooked up an electric turbine engine off the wheels of that train. I ran the wires up to the sewing machine on my pocket knife and ducked in just in time not to be seen by the CSNX police in my hometown of Philippi. Well, now, Grafton is only 14 miles away from Philippi by track, and I knew that train would be stopping in Grafton, and I knew the CSNX police would be waiting there to arrest me for trespassing. I didn't want to be on that train when I got to Grafton, and I wanted to know just how much time I had to work. So I pulled out my calculator, punched Mach 1 into 14 miles, and I figured out we'd be in Grafton pretty darn quick. So I set myself to work. I took some of those leaves, some of that garbage, even my very own T-shirt, and I weaved that into a lightweight nylon-type material, primitive though it was, and then I sewed that into a huge hot air balloon. Now, with the berries I'd picked, I was able to dye that balloon just a delicate shade of purple. Well, then I took the sticks and the reed, and I weaved them into a huge basket, and then I shredded my blue jeans to connect the basket to that balloon. And then I just needed some way to power that balloon, and at first I thought I'd use nuclear power, but then I said to myself, uranium is just so messy, and besides, I had all this wonderful West Virginia bituminous coal right there, but please, people, make no mistake. Before I used that coal, I built a scrubber to scrub the coal to get all the sulfites out so I wouldn't pollute the air of the greatest state in the Union, West Virginia. Well, that done and my balloon full, that took right around 6 seconds, and, well, on the 7th second, I rested. While I was resting, I read a little Aristotle for a class I had later that day, and then I made a diamond by squeezing a piece of coal between my thumb and forefinger. I attribute that mostly to the adrenaline rush. But then up ahead of me, I saw a clearing, so I got out a bottle of Frank Androsi's Melomel wine. I christened that balloon the West Virginia Flying America. I put my goggles on, threw my scarf around my neck, and when we got to that clearing, I just lifted up and drifted on back to Buchanan. All in all, it was a darn exciting trip, and if any of you are coal miners, I thank you for the coal that keeps America flying.
The first story with Maynard the Moose was by Willie Claflin. The second story with the multifunctional Swiss Army knife was West Virginia's foremost liar, Bill Lepp. They are two of the many tellers who will be at the Brandywine Storytelling Festival, Friday, June 21st, and Saturday, June 22nd, at the Upland Country Day School in Kennett Square, PA. Ticket information can be found at brandywinefestival2013.eventbrite.com. Bright is spelled B-R-I-T-E. Or Google the website, but be warned, they were previously the Lower Brandywine Storytelling Festival. They have relocated and reinvented themselves and are now the Brandywine Storytelling Festival. Among the other tellers, they plan to bring Mr. Mark Twain out of mothballs. You can expect to see him there. I hope you can all come to this wonderful festival. Until then, have fun and keep a story in your heart.